The Daily Gazette Company presents the Weighing In podcast, the show that brings you inside the Daily Gazette's feature news column. Now, here's your host, writer of the Weighing In column, Andrew Waite.
Welcome to the Weighing In podcast. I'm Andrew Waite, and I have with me today reporter Tyler A. McNeil, who, if you haven't read his stuff, I'm sure you have read his stuff, but he's doing excellent work. He has a nose for news, as we say, and just finds amazing stories that really nobody else is finding, and so keep paying attention to his byline. But I wanted to bring him in today because the column for Sunday this week came from him. And he came to me last week and he said, you know, it's been a pretty tough March. And if Tyler, could you just sort of talk about why you were feeling like it's been a pretty tough month? Why, you know, the news is kind of always bad, but what was particularly bad about this month?
I think I remember coming to you and I had this preconceived notion beforehand. I was like, I know that you hate column ideas.
Which is not true, by the way.
Yeah, I don't know. I assumed that you didn't. It's been a rocky March, kind of from the get-go.
Yeah, and March 6th, what happened? Tell me about the breaking news that you covered that day.
That was the news of the death of AJ Smolin,
right?
Who is the assembly member Robert Smolin's son, only 14 years old. Unless you were close to the family at that time, you knew what had happened beforehand.
Because there was a crash in February in Niskayuna. He was injured.
Yeah, you knew that happened, but you really had no idea on the condition. And actually, to some degree, you know, things kind of took a normal, way with them. Like, there was one point where I believe it was Mayfield School District, and it was a number of businesses. They wore flannels, and for some reason, in my mind, kind of processing that without actually knowing closer to what was going on or any insider details on you know, the child's condition, there was kind of a sense somewhere where it's like, no, he's coming back.
Yeah, I mean, it was stable condition, right? Critical but stable.
Yes.
Yeah. And then 2 weeks later, Assemblyman Smolin posts really a devastating photo of AJ. It was from AJ as a younger boy, but sleeping next to a dog and just, you know, just a heart-wrenching photo to look at and a message that he hadn't made it. He'd lost his battle.
I just got into the parking lot of the Daily Gazette at the time, and I hadn't even seen the post yet. You know, I get a call from my supervising editor at the time, and it's just like, oh yeah, so by the way, AJ Smolin has died. And I'm just thinking at the time, I'm like, there's no way.
Yeah,
there's no way.
As a reporter, what goes through your mind when something like that happens? Because as a human, you're processing this, but then you're also sort of snapping into action. So yeah, talk about that dichotomy if you could.
I wouldn't call it adrenaline because it's not like I'm not pumped about it, but I'm like, I have a job to do. I got to get to the details, the nitty gritty. It is almost unhuman to some degree, but like the humanity of it catches up after the fact. You know, it's kind of like that feeling where, you know, somebody gets slapped in the face and they're just like, they're going into action. But, you know, later on, that's when you kind of start to digest it a little bit. And it also kind of, I guess, when you're talking individually to members of the family, every single time, you know, whether it's, you know, and I've done this plenty of times before, whether it's in person or over the phone, there's kind of that after the fact, every time there's an after, there's just kind of a, but then you go back and then at the end of the day, whenever that hour is, when you're going home, that's when you have that kind of moment of just kind of like sitting in silence and staring out the window of your car. Yeah.
And your story, particularly about AJ, very much humanized him. And as painful as that is, you bring that human element into the reporting. I mean, the lead of that story is about him loving old books, and then you get into his love of hunting and fishing and love of puzzles, and really start to paint a picture of who this kid was. And it's so sad because it's a lost life, but there's so much humanity that you bring from your reporting into the final product of that.
Well, thank you, because that was my goal in mind at the time. I, when I made some of the phone calls, I would start out with, listen, you know, there's going to be a lot of reporting out there that's just going to be center focused on its assemblyman, you know, Smolin's child. I just wanted to think of it more in a way of like, I want to know what AJ was like. Mm-hmm. I want to know, I want to paint a broader picture about his life. And whenever I've done a story that's dealing with death, that is what I really, really want to focus on. Mm-hmm. I guess the unusual element of this is usually in reporting, there's kind of, depending on how death occurs, there's, I don't want to say it's formulaic, but there's an element of the first day you just get the news that, you know, it happened, the details, when, where, why, you know, whatever. Usually the police reporting, depending on what type of situation it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's this routine.
There is a routine, and I hate to kind of phrase it like that, but, you know, obviously it's a trade and there's a way to do it. And the difference with AJ was I immediately went to kind of the humanization of it. I wouldn't want to say that I got a little bothered, but there was some reporting that was just generally, oh yeah, you know, he was in a car crash and he was the son of an assemblyman.
Right.
I want to get beyond that.
Yeah. And then, of course, typically in our news cycle and with the local news, a big story like that is not always immediately followed by more big stories that sort of grip the region in the same way. I mean, yes and no, but in this case, a few days later, you had just written this piece about AJ Smolin, and you are the only reporter working for the Gazette on Sunday, and it was Sunday, March 10th, where there were two major tragedies breaking. So we're talking about the helicopter crash at the Texas-Mexico border on Friday, March 8th, where there were two local National Guardsmen or National Guard soldiers killed and one critically injured. And then, of course, a day after that crash was when police were first investigating what would ultimately be the Halo Branton death, who was the roughly 11-month-old baby who was found in a utility pipe on the GE campus and ultimately determined to be dead on the 10th, on Sunday the 10th. Walk me through that Sunday, if you could. It's one thing to have to be solo on one of those stories, but to do two of those huge stories in such a condensed period of time. Just what did that day look like for you?
What a day. You actually have to start out this timeline maybe 12 hours earlier or so. I was at Barden Baker in Troy. I was at a birthday party. I was having a very medium time, I would say.
You have a social life, Tyler?
I apparently at some point. I didn't for long, because then I was just like, oh, I got this. I looked at Slack, and then I ended up getting this news about the National Guard soldiers, and just, you know, kind of the difference is this was kind of like, okay, we definitely need to get this out there, and I was in breaking news mode. And that was, you know, that was the night of, I want to say it was close to around 8 o'clock that night when, the gears started working on that. And the incident occurred on Friday of that week. So, you know, this news was still just really just still surfacing and there wasn't a lot out there. But I got the, you know, there was reporting that came in about Gracia and about Casey. And I knew that much. I knew about Pratt. That was included too.
Yeah, and Jacob Pratt was the injured guardsman.
Yep. And I mean, to be honest, there really still isn't that many details. Yeah. It's still under investigation. We don't know much more than that. So I just immediately snapped into that. And honestly, at this point, my heart wasn't singing necessarily the same way as with AJ, just because like it was so fast and there was, you know, it was so many details really at once, and you know, I kind of had an idea. Okay, you know, I'm working the whole day Sunday. This is gonna be what I'm
right. You thought that would be the main piece that you'd be writing about, yeah.
And I knew that I was going to reach out to the family. I had, you know, an idea that like there really is no playbook. You know, I've had some crazy Sundays before. I don't know why things just happen on Saturday night, but they do.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah, and I get to the office. I am the only one there. You know, I start making those phone calls
about the Halo Branton case you're talking
well,
about. Or you're talking about you were working on the helicopter case.
I learned about the Halo Branton case around like 8:30 ish
in the morning.
Morning, yes, to clarify. And I remember, I ended up calling the chief. You know, he didn't pick up at this point, but there was definite confirmation, other reporting at that time that, you know, that there was a child missing. Mm-hmm. Still had no idea what the age was. There was still, if you remember at that time, I believe the Times Union reported that the child was like 1 year old. Mm-hmm. 1 year old. And I just kind of remember at that time, I was like, I don't know why, but there was a level of like, I was thinking, okay, because sometimes there's just custody issues. So I think that kind of came through in my mind that because we had no, you know, we have no idea about the parents. We have no idea about anything. There are, you know, obviously you don't report on them, but there's preconceived notions that just kind of float around. And you know, you've gone through enough missing child cases, you start to think, okay, you know, blank, 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 blank.
Right.
And I was thinking, okay, maybe this is a custody situation. So maybe, you know, like the father or something just took the child and, you know, went to Price Chopper and then there was a domestic situation or something like that.
Mm-hmm. But of course, by midday, we found out.
Yeah,
what.
we knew that this child was 11 months old. We knew that obviously everybody knew that there was an Amber Alert out because there was an Amber Alert out, and you know, there was still that part in my head that was just like, everything's gonna be okay.
Hmm.
I don't know why. I just thought that everything is gonna be okay, especially when that Amber Alert turned off. When they canceled it, I was like, okay, Halo's been found.
Mm-hmm. Good. Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Halo's been found. And I think, right. And that was...
There was a collective sigh of relief.
Yeah. And keep in mind, I'm several phone calls in, so the situation that's really going on with Gracia, mm-hmm. And I end up focusing really largely around Gracia to start with. Just because I'm just starting to get information on how, you know, really connected in every way, shape, or form this guy was to our, you know, to the coverage area and you know, in the Fonda area and, you know, the Great Sacandaga Lake, like that's something that I later learned. The family was, you know, very involved in the the boat club over there.
Sorry, it's picking that up.
Yeah, I just noticed that.
It's okay.
And, you know, so I start looking at the Gracia story, and you know, I do get elements of Casey, because it was actually interesting. The, you know, I also talked to the Amsterdam town supervisor, Tom de Meza, and I learned that he knew both. And most people that I've spoken with, you know, whether they knew both or were familiar with both, you know, that's the thing about the Gracia story that really grips you, is that they're all interconnected and they were all friends.
Yeah. And that to me is the thing about local news, is right. Like it hits you in a sort of different way because you have either friends of a friend or whoever. I mean, there's more likely to be that personal connection and just to have it. That much harder to take.
So I learned that they're, you know, that they were friends. I just learn, you know, all the details about their life. And honestly, it is an honor, when as much of a tragedy, it's an honor to learn about these people. And I, to a large degree, kind of wish we viewed life in this capacity, all the time. Without the tragedy included, is looking at the, you know, the humanity of people who are, I would say, deserving of it, because you know, there are exceptions to that, but you know, trying to really grasp at the humanity of people and what they meant to others in their community, what they meant to family members. Like, I had the honor of just of being able to work with the sister of Gracia, and also the aunt of Gracia, really kind of get an idea, as I said before with AJ, an idea of his life.
Right, exactly. And yeah, that came through in the coverage, and came through in an especially beautiful piece you wrote about the escort of the two soldiers.
Thank you.
That's worth reading as well. Come Monday morning after, you know, so Sunday, March 10th was this awful day with Halo Branton.
I do have to continue kind of, if I could, on Sunday, because it was a crazy day. So you end up getting to, like, you know, I'm at this point, I'm starting to think, like, there may or may not be a press conference. Then there is.
About Halo Branton.
About Halo Branton particularly.
Right.
And keep in mind at this point, you know, I'm pretty much simultaneously working on both of them.
Right.
I go to the press conference and, you know, just, you know, once, I'm sorry, I have to remember the...
Persia Nelson? Or what?
No, the name of the,
Chief Clifford? Eric Clifford?
It wasn't Clifford. It was their spokesperson, the PIO.
Oh, I don't know the name.
Mascheron.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I believe it's lieutenant. So once the lieutenant's there, it's freezing. It's oddly cold for kind of a unusually mild period. And I'm out there, and, you know, there's a bunch of other reporters. And they're kind of doing the same thing as I am. I don't know how they process it afterwards, but they're, you know, they're going in the moment and they're doing their job. And then there's that moment where everything fell. And
what do you mean?
Everything just fell. You know, just your gut just fell once you started hearing the lieutenant say, you know, that there is the unfortunate news that Halo Branton has died. I think that, you know, there was almost a brief period of silence that I remember after that, and it just everything changed at that moment. And, you know, that was the part that just kind of can replay to some degree. You can just see that moment replaying and replaying. And I think that everybody in the area at that time, you know, if they were watching any live feed or any sort, that probably happened to them as well. So,
because most people thought the cancellation of the Amber Alert meant she'd been found safely.
Yeah,
it was safe.
and I was one of them. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And you know, it's funny too, because you, when you're talking about news reporting, you know, there's that idea of like, well, I have a feeling, but I can't write it.
Yeah.
Like, I have a feeling that something's, you know, that something's going on, but I obviously can't write it. And at that time, you know, I had a feeling she was alive. You know, I think a lot of people did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I the station's not far from the office. I come back. Keep in mind that there's also, on this day, there was early deadlines.
Mm.
It was, I believe it was, it was early. I can't tell. I don't remember exactly if it was 6:30 or it was 6 o'clock, but it was earlier than usual. Mm. So I have two of these stories that I'm kind of doing simultaneously. And I'm, and there was at one point where, one of the paginators said, you know, do you just want to drop the Gracia story?
Mm.
And I said, no. I really got to get this out there. We got to do it today. I think the other option that I had was that I ended up telling to Pugs is I said, you know, I was like, okay, with the Gracia story, there's a possibility we could just kind of, because we didn't print it before, it was just web, that we could just use the previous version. I was like, and I also said, no, we don't have to, you know, that's a worst case scenario, but we're not going to do that. We're going to run this story. And we did. And I'm really glad that we were able to do it. It's kind of funny because I think that there is this notion with us that we want these tragedies to occur.
Like journalists root for it.
Yeah, that they root for it. And I always try to tell anyone whenever I can. It's like, I'm never rooting for this. I love good stories.
Yeah.
Whenever I can write them.
Yeah.
And you know, writing bad stories is an obligation. Mm-hmm. That's the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Is that I love good stories. Writing bad stories is an obligation, and that's extremely important.
Yeah.
That we do that.
Right.
I hear, you know, like, why isn't there? I've heard a number of times there's not enough good news, and I'm just like, yeah, there's not, because it's not happening.
Right. And also, when you stretch resources thin in local newsrooms, and there is bad news happening, we have an obligation, as you said,
you have an obligation.
Cover those stories. That's what reporters have to spend their time on, being able
Certainly.
To write. You know, nicer features is
yeah.
luxury, essentially, and
yeah.
one that is harder to come by here as newsrooms are being stretched thin. And
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, your Sunday, that Sunday just sort of, I mean, illustrates a lot about what local news looks like and
yeah.
also the effect it has on the people who are doing this work. And come Monday morning, yeah, just, I mean, you came to my desk and you said, it was a tough day yesterday. And I mean, what do you remember thinking about, or you think you said, I hope it's a better day today.
I just remember being kind of stuck for a little bit, you know, like the Gracia story I held on to, you know, my editor actually kind of came in and was just like, we're gonna give the story on Halo to Ted, and it ended up being Natasha and then Ted, but
those are just different Gazette reporters, Ted Remsnyder.
Yeah, just for clarification. But kind of at that point, just kind of knew that this was even unusually just two separate circumstances. Sometimes you'll have one circumstance that's just terrible. Like, think about the reporters that have had to cover school shootings.
Right, right.
And things of that nature. You know, that doesn't... I mean, if you're a psychopath, I guess that doesn't go away on the psyche. But if whether you're professional or not, at some point, you know, you have to go to bed and you have to, you know, stare at that ceiling for a little bit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that the next morning I was a little frozen, and I was frozen going home. So I was frozen going home. I get up, still just kind of emotionless.
Yeah.
Really just emotionless. Because if I was still doing that story, I don't think I would have been as emotionless.
Right,
because
you would have been continuing to work on it. It would have sort of taken your attention.
It would have taken my attention, but as I said, whenever you get those breathers, that's when it hits.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. Every time after the interview, there's a moment of, oh, God.
Yeah.
And that's when it hits. Mm-hmm. You know, those little incremental, like, moments when you're done with it and you're just reeling, and then you go back, and then like that night, I mentioned this earlier, but I was just staring out the window. I was like, oh my God, you know, this was a lot to unravel. I called a friend, and I couldn't really even talk about it at the time. Like, I was just I tried to, but I, you know, couldn't get beyond it for a little bit, you know, just because that was in my personal time, in my personal frame of mind, you know. And when I'm saying all this, you know, I don't want anything to take away from the people that were another thought that I had that came to mind was just like with the first responders with Halo. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about that at night too. I was like, wow, they must be going through something very different. And even the lieutenant pointed it out. It's just kind of like, yeah, not, this might have been, and I'm paraphrasing, one of the worst cases that I've had to deal with. Mm-hmm. Something along those lines. It's just like I was thinking about that, because that's another thing. And that's just a very Tylerism. It's just like, kind of just like, well, you know, whatever you're feeling through, you have to think of what they're feeling at the same time. Yeah. That's just kind of what goes to mind. I've also come to the conclusion that, like, you know, everybody can kind of, whatever side they're on or whatever, you know, job they have in that moment, you know, everybody feels something different. And everybody processes things different. And, you know, you have an obligation to do this, but it's not something you're rooting for. They're like, yeah. Something that I don't like the word color. I hate when somebody says on a story, could you add some color or something like that? Because that just comes, like,
it's like
I'm
flippant.
I'm just telling a story. Like, it just, that's not color to me. That's the story. Right, you know, right. That's not, I'm not adding an element, like it's some sort of technical formula. Like, mm-hmm. No, that's just the, you know, the best way that I can convey this. Mm-hmm. To anyone. And, you know, that's just kind of, it's a little pet peeve of mine. When somebody says, could you add some color? I think I once heard a reporter say, could you give me some color? And I'm like, what is that question?
Yeah.
Like, that's just, that just doesn't come naturally. So whenever I think of, you know, kind of like the situations like these, I think, you know, I'm just writing the story. Like, that's just kind of how it comes to mind. Is, are there elements of style? Sure, but that's not, you know, the first thing that's really going through my head. So definitely after that day, I was a little emotionless for just going back, for quite some time.
Yeah, and it's really lingered all month, and that's what's led to you suggesting that we write a piece, because a lot of people are probably dealing with the same sorts of emotions. I mean, even if they don't have a specific connection to it, they are reading this stuff, consuming it, and having emotional reactions to it. And so that's the piece that I'm going to read now. March is typically a gloomy month. Snowmelt turns yards into mucky messes, with thoughts of green grass and summer barbecues still distant dreams. In the prolonged period of gray, hats and mittens must remain handy, and we do our best to muddle through. But this March has been particularly miserable. It's not just last weekend's heavy, wet snow that caked tree limbs and downed power lines, burying thoughts of an early spring. This March has been tough because our readership area has lived through a spate of especially grave news. Yes, the news cycle, even the local one, is a near constant churn of troubling headlines. But we don't often have three major heartbreaking cases grip our region in such rapid succession in the way we did this month. So if you're feeling especially down on top of more expected seasonal sadness, know you're not alone. We can feel overwhelmed, stressed, anxious, hopeless when it comes to seeing all the bad things that are constantly being presented to us, said Laressa Slater, an outpatient mental health therapist at the Family Counseling Center in Gloversville. And it comes from everywhere, Facebook, Instagram, TV, there's no escaping the news. All the worse when the big stories are as sad as they have been recently. The first major news to break this month was the death of State Assemblyman Robert Smullen's 14-year-old son. A.J. Smullen died March 6th in the intensive care unit at Albany Medical Center, where he was being treated for a traumatic brain injury after a car hit him on Route 7 in Niskayuna in February. The Mayfield High School student loved old books, hunting, and solving puzzles, according to a reporter by none other than Tyler McNeil, who's sitting across from me. A.J. was quiet but passionate and regularly helped with his father's political campaigning. A picture that Smullen shared online of A.J. at a younger age, sleeping peacefully on a couch with a small dog's head resting on his shoulder, is simply crushing. Days after A.J.'s death, more tragedy struck. On Friday, March 8th, a military helicopter crashed at the Texas-Mexico border during a patrol. The incident, still being investigated, killed two local National Guard soldiers, 30-year-old Rotterdam native John Gracia and 28-year-old Casey Frankowski of Rensselaer County. Jacob Pratt, a Rensselaer native, survived but was seriously injured. Finally opening his eyes days after the crash, the guardsman faces a painstaking recovery. The catastrophe put the all-too-real risk of public service into the local spotlight in a way that's not routine. State police haven't held an escort ceremony for a member of the force killed on a military mission since Marine John McKenna of Clifton Park died in Iraq 18 years ago, state police spokesperson Stephanie O'Neill told McNeil. Then, just as news of the UH-72 Lakota crash was still landing, Schenectady police responded to a Saturday, March 9th call about a trespasser at the GE campus just after 11 p.m. That set off an overnight search that ended with 11-month-old Halo Branton found inside a utility pipe. She was pronounced dead on Sunday, March 10th, with an autopsy determining hypothermia to be the cause. The baby's 24-year-old mother, Persia Nelson, has been charged with second-degree murder. In addition, this grim local news came on top of standardly depressing national and international headlines, including about the recent deadly bridge collapse in Baltimore and the war in Gaza. With all of these stories, breaking coverage is just the beginning. The news obituaries that follow share the soul-crushing, humanizing details like Trooper Gracia's desire to one day serve as the governor's helicopter detail, or Frankowski's dedication to service as well as her fun-loving spirit and her prowess at tennis and bowling. Then there's the coverage of the funerals and of court appearances. Necessary and important as this type of constant coverage is for a well-informed citizenry, the news is relentless, and it keeps stories, sad as they are, in the collective consciousness. Plus, every development can be tumultuous, with hope rising only to be dashed, making the ultimate bad news all the more devastating. In Halo Branton's case, police called off an Amber Alert at 12:36 p.m. on March 10th, prompting an ever-so-brief collective sigh of relief for people thinking the baby had been found safe. As a result, news of her death came as a gut punch. The Smullen story followed a similarly tragic trajectory, with initial reports after the crash declaring AJ was in critical condition. Of course, the people directly involved with these cases feel the effects most acutely, but none of us is immune, said Slater of the Family Counseling Center. When it comes to having it be a community concern, a lot of people are going to feel connected to that story, she said. If something happened here, then a lot of people would be aware of it, and they would be trying to come up with ways to engage with other people about it and help each other out. Many of us tend to feel these stories like wet snow on our shoulders, grief coating an entire region. But know that this feeling is not forever, even for some of the families at the center of these events. The empathy expressed by families who lost loved ones in the Schoharie limo crash toward Nauman Hussein's girlfriend after Hussein was convicted last spring reminds us that kindness and love can grow out of grief. In the meantime, if you need help feeling better, go outside to benefit from the sun's health healing rays, focus on getting good sleep, lean on your support network, or go to therapy, Slater said. Or volunteer. If you're feeling out of control, then there are always opportunities to help create positive change in the world, Slater said. Like supporting your local shelters or your local community centers, volunteer in any way you can. Even in the depths of misery, remember that hope remains. Remember that last April, feelings of summer came early with record high temperature readings climbing well into the 80s. With our march of misery behind us, brighter days are just ahead. Thanks for listening. I want to give special gratitude to Tyler A. McNeil for joining us today and being willing to talk just really candidly and really personally about what it was like to cover these tragedies this month. We commend him for the work that he has done and the effort he's put in and the toll it's he's bearing to just emotionally and physically to be doing this work. It doesn't come easily, and it just deserves a lot of praise. So thank you, Tyler, for all you've done. And thanks to Zebulon Schmidt, who handles the technical editing for this podcast. I'm Andrew Waite. Take care.